Next case is 95-2279, Rollin Feichner versus Ohio Department of Transportation.
Did the trial court and or the Court of Appeals have the benefit of the Sendeni decision at the time they decided this case?
Yes, Your Honor. It had been decided in the Court of Appeals. It had not been decided in the Supreme Court. It was a 2-1 decision.
I'm asking, they did not have the benefit of what we said in that case when they made this decision, did they?
They really are not identical, are they? I mean, here we didn't have the Transportation Department with a plan to install fences along overpasses for several years, a plan of which they never reacted. And I guess I'm wondering, the factual issue here seems to be whether this fence could be extended reasonably, or was there room for it to be extended? There's apparently a factual issue on how far beyond the regular fencing on the overpass one could extend the fencing to protect the lane being pushed over. What's your contention? Is the fact, I'm not clear from your brief, from either brief, frankly, exactly what the facts are there, except that the trial court seems to say that there was not room to do that safely.
I don't agree with the conclusions of the trial court, but by virtue of the fact, in existence at that time, at the time of the death of Roland Feichner on the highway, the Harvard Avenue Bridge south of Fleet Avenue is fully extended, and there are photographs, marks, and exhibits that were admitted by the trial court where the fence covers the entire length of the sidewalk and the railing. Immediately north of the Fleet Avenue Bridge is the Pershing Avenue Bridge. That bridge had updated full-length fencing, the cover, the full length of the sidewalk and railing is across. There's really no reasonable explanation why, for some reason, when the traffic is moved to the right, and there's no overhead protection, that there's no duty to anticipate what they already have notice of.
What does this testimony then about the allegations in the state's brief that even your expert, I guess, testified that he didn't know of any requirement to do this, didn't know where it even had been done before, and that sort of seems like we have a different factual case here than the two sides. What's your view of that?
Your Honor, the test is reasonableness. How difficult would it have been, if nothing else, temporarily, to cover the overhead area that was exposed to the drivers if they opposed the bridge? I cannot argue on the facts exactly what should have been done, but I think within reason and within cost constraints, it could have been done.
You mentioned some other areas that had fencing. Were those also construction areas? Because I think the determining factor in this case, that this was a temporary construction area and that there has never been any requirement to provide fencing in those instances.
I can't recall, Your Honor, that the resurfacing contract was $6 or $7 million, and it covered a great deal of resurfacing in the treatment area in the vicinity of these three bridges. I cannot stand before the court and say for a fact that this was going on at Street, Pershing, or Harbor at the same time. But I think the big issue here, which I think the court should consider and reverse, is because there is construction, doesn't reduce the level of safety, the duty of a foreseeable act.
Well, that's the point I want to get to. I want to get to whether or not, since you said the other build of bridges had fences already, that ODOT must have been on notice that this was a problem of people throwing things off bridges. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Now, if Fleet Avenue Bridge, was there any evidence that ODOT knew, since there is a fence up already, they should have known or were on notice that this was a problem with the Fleet Avenue Bridge, that they had objects being thrown over that bridge? Was there evidence to show that they knew this?
Your Honor, there is an affidavit signed by one of the victims whose car was struck the same night, that his car was struck and that he's from some of the police during the prior summer of kids throwing rocks off of that specific bridge. In addition to this, Your Honor, one of the engineers, whose name I believe is Forsberg, said that he had knowledge of policy 1005, despite the fact that the policy document itself wasn't produced in this trial. ODOT engineer Forsberg said he knew of policy 1005. He knew that it was an indexing system to place screening on the bridges, but his answer was, this already had a screen. Now, the interrogatory, ODOT admits the purpose of the fencing, and I use screens, the purpose of the fencing is to prevent dropping and throwing of objects. This fence didn't do that because it wasn't in the area where ODOT placed the plaintiff and his wife.
But if this fence was already up for quite a while, which is what I have from the record, and you had kids throwing something over this bridge anyway in the summer before, which I don't recall seeing that, but it doesn't seem to me because I thought there was no evidence of prior problems. They care because the fence didn't stop them, so you got a proper cloud issue.
Because the fence was inadequate, Your Honor. The photographs marked as exhibits clearly show that from the point when this rock was thrown, there's no fencing above or in front of the.
You're picking up this morning that the fence that was already on the bridge, are you saying that was inadequate?
Not in normal lanes of travel.
And how did that not prevent these kids from the year in the summer from throwing stuff over if it was not inadequate?
Probably because it wasn't updated the way it was updated on Harvard and Pershing.
Either that, or are you just making a speculation?
No, I'm not speculating.
Harding and Pershing, were those construction areas?
I don't know at the time of this accident if they were construction.
The record doesn't, it's not in the record.
It's identified.
That would be important, wouldn't it? Because that's the whole issue here, is whether the state had some duty to extend this fence that was already there, to extend it to cover the new lane, the temporary lane that the state required persons to travel. Isn't that the issue?
Yes, yes, Your Honor. So independent, there was a letter from the ODOT director sent to ODOT Engineer Forsberg in Cleveland, Ohio, and that's identified and in the file as exhibit. The letter was from the mayor of Middleburg Heights, expressing concern that rocks are being thrown off the bridges in other areas close by where this happened. I think it's unfair prudent to say that plaintiff hasn't satisfied an element that the state of Ohio knew that this particular bridge had problems. I mean, things like this were happening statewide. There had been a letter from this director that was copied to Engineer Leek, who was a witness in this case. And the response was, well, there's a fence up there. Well, the surface was changed. The state of Ohio, the Department of Transportation, placed the upper flight in harm's way by shifting the lane into an exposed area.
On another factual issue, the appellee says Dr. Crowley testified that as the Feichner vehicle passed under the bridge, the area directly above the vehicle was completely fenced. Do you agree with that? And they cite the Crowley deposition. Is that true?
Your Honor, the appellee, I believe, is nitpicking. The lane is exposed and was close to the bridge. There's no berm under the bridge. The lane is taken. So obviously, if the vehicle had been under the bridge, it wouldn't have been struck. It was struck before it got to the underpass.
The question I started out with and tried to get answered before it was cut off is Semendeni. We discussed all of this, didn't we?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Semendeni was decided in March of 1996. This case was decided by the Court of Appeals in September 95, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
So therefore, the Court of Appeals did not have the benefit or the knowledge of Sendeni when they decided it, did they?
They did not have the knowledge of the facts. They had the same existing law at this time, Your Honor.
No, I'm talking about, okay.
The engineers statewide do a policy 10.05.1 independent of the commodities. I'd like to say a few minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Petitia. Ms. Hofiker.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The only issue really before this Court today is whether or not ODOT was negligent for failing to extend the fence beyond limits of the bridge during construction throughout. So the case is not a commodity case. And it really doesn't matter whether or not the Court of Appeals had the benefit of this court's decision in Tamami prior to deciding this case, because this case is not a
Was ODOT on notice concerning the additional problems construction areas present? Is there any letters in the file concerning construction areas and the need for fencing, temporary fencing?
Absolutely not. In fact, what Mr. Gary Krieger testified to, and he is the construction guru for ODOT, he testified that never before had there ever been a situation where a rock was thrown off a bridge onto a construction project road and someone was injured, or even knowledge that a rock had been thrown off. There was absolutely no notice in the record, and that's one of the arguments that we are making in this case, that this court has long held, that you have to have the actual or constructive notice before duty arises. And the affidavit that counsel referred to was never admitted into evidence in this case. The letter he referred to was not from an area nearby the particular bridge. In addition, when ODOT responded to that letter, ODOT found out that, in fact, that bridge, which, by the way, was also an unfenced bridge, as was the bridge in Kiwami, that particular bridge, in fact, there were no documented incidents of rock throwing incidents from that bridge.
Counsel, the decision by ODOT to
prioritizes those bridges. Does that include retrofitting bridges that had previously been fenced, but that fencing was deemed to be ineffective when they not state of the art at one time when they undertook the statewide project?
Absolutely not. And that is certainly one of the distinguishing factors between this case and Tamati. Because in Tamati, there was a policy to rank unfenced bridges and to fence certain bridges under that policy.
And none of the bridges in that pecking order included bridges that presently had some fence but not enough fence.
Correct. Absolutely. There, in fact, at the time, and at her time as well, the policy that ODOT has is that fences are only upgraded when rehab projects are undertaken. In other words, when you're redoing the entire bridge, that's when you could upgrade a fence. Now, it's interesting that Council brings up Harvard and Pershing. Evidence in the record shows that the Fleet Avenue Bridge was built in the early 1970s, and it was built in accordance with the generally accepted standard at that time. That was how the fences were being placed. If you look at the pictures, the parapet comes up here at the end of the fence. That type of design was not being used in the 1980s, which is when Harvard and Pershing had their bridges redone, and of course, the new fences put in. The other interesting part in the record was that, in fact, bridges such as Harvard and Pershing that have a equidistant parapet throughout the entire length of the bridge and beyond the bridge, that those bridges that have the fence extended just to kind of give it that clean look, are now being taken down. And we've gone back to using the type of fences that that you see at the Fleet Avenue Bridge. And the reason being is that they found that there's problems with extending the fence. You get into cycling these problems.
Council, you emphasize the fact that ODOT was not on any notice that there were rocks being thrown at this area.
Correct.
All right. There was a fence on the bridge over at Fleet.
Correct.
Why was the fence put up to begin with?
Well, and there's clear evidence in the record that at the time this fence was placed in the early 1970s, that the actual standard for the time was to use aluminum rail.
No, I don't care about construction or how high or low it is. Why was it put up?
It was put up at the request of the City of Cleveland. The standard, what ODOT would normally install...
Was it put up because there were people throwing things off of the bridge?
Absolutely not.
They had no notice of people throwing things off the bridge, and they just put a fence up to make it aesthetically sound?
No, what the city, the evidence in the record was the City of Cleveland requested fences because, one, it was cheaper, and two, they were concerned because at that time the aluminum rail was more expensive, and they were afraid that people would come in maybe and try to take off the aluminum rail.
Why did Cleveland want to put a fence up there?
I'm sorry?
Why did Cleveland think it necessary to put a fence up there?
Well, at the time that the refurbishing of the bridge was taking place, there were requirements to put something. You had to have a traffic barrier, which is the concrete parapet, and you had to have what was considered a pedestrian rail. It had to be at least 3 foot
high. We're talking about fencing now, aren't we? Not railings.
Well, fencing was put up instead of a rail. The fencing
because
was
it was cheaper? Is that what you're telling me? Because there was no need? You're telling me that these fences were put up because there was no need whatsoever to protect the cars from people throwing things down on the highway. It was just put up because it looked better or that it served some purpose, but we don't really know what it is.
With regard to the bridge, the Fleet Avenue Bridge, the bridge in this case.
How about the bridges over the other... Were there problems of the other bridges? People throwing things over?
No. There were no problems in this area.
In any area.
Nonetheless.
But yet, nonetheless, the fences were put up.
Well, the policy that ODOT had is that you have certain minimum requirements because you don't want people falling off. And we also indicated that, sure, the fences do discourage the dropping of objects.
Weren't these minimum requirements met when the bridge was constructed to begin with?
Were these minimum requirements met?
Well, you said they're only put up there to meet minimum requirements of safety, would you say?
Absolutely.
All right. And they were added to the bridge after the original construction? Were they not?
No.
They weren't?
No.
I see.
No, these fences were part of, when you refurbish a bridge and you take up the deck and you replace the deck, then you put in the traffic rail, which is the concrete trail bed.
Okay.
And then you either put some sort of pedestrian rail. On the Fleet Avenue Bridge, instead of using a pedestrian rail, the city of Cleveland, it was their policy to request ODOT to please put fences up to the pedestrian rail. But it would have been appropriate to have just put up a pedestrian rail.
Wouldn't they perhaps have put up a fence on a bridge like this, as just as you'd put up a guardrail on a curve, even though there have been no accidents there? It makes good sense, because you know sometimes people go off a curve, that you know sometimes people throw rocks off bridges, and so I would guess Cleveland maybe wanted to do that. But that's a different question than whether they should extend. I mean, if there had been a lot of complaints about people throwing rocks off this bridge or trying to, then that's a different case than with respect to extending this piece than it is if you don't have any particular incidences on this bridge.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And there's no reason to believe that because the lane was shifted below that there would be a problem. And if you look at the dynamics of this particular incident, it's quite clear that on that particular evening at 11:12 and again at 11:15, anonymous phone calls were made saying, the frontal deck command is actually throwing rocks off this bridge. The plaintiff's car was hit at 11:25. Another vehicle testified, another individual told the police department that I was showered with rocks at 11:27. At 11:40, another vehicle was hit. At 11:50, the DePue vehicle that council mentions was hit. And it's very interesting to note that Mr. DePue states that he, as approaching the bridge, noticed all the rocks. He moved to where he could not have to ride over the rock. He moved to the right lane. So it's quite clear that it wasn't just this area close to the bridge that was littered with rocks. The entire freeway was littered with rocks by this Mr. Jackson. He was out there for nearly an hour. There is absolutely no evidence in the record that he was going to be dissuaded by an extra 3 or 4 foot fence, which is what it comes down to. Plaintiff's experts testified totally under the wrong notions of what the facts of this case were. He believed that, in fact, traffic was completely on the berm. That wasn't the case. He believed that the berm was 10 foot wide, and that's why he suggested 10 foot additional fencing. That he said on cross, well, the extension only needs to be the width of the shift in traffic. What Mr. Forsberg testified to, that where the bicycle vehicle was hit, the shift in traffic from where you would normally be driving down that road to where you were driving in the construction project was only 1/10 of 1 foot. We're talking less than 2 inches. Because the reality was that there is no shoulder underneath that bridge. These are old highways, and that's just how they were built. So you can't shift people onto a shoulder that doesn't exist. And
you're almost getting to a proximate cause causal relationship argument, aren't you?
I'm sorry?
That there was really no proximate cause or causal relationship between what Jackson was doing and this injury.
Absolutely. The sole proximate cause was what Mr. Jackson was doing, and the evidence in the record clearly indicated that he could accomplish his mission regardless of anything the Department of Transportation did. In fact, the witnesses testified that it really was trying. And the other thing, let me just point out, badly enough, is that we really have no evidence in the record as to where he threw the rock that hit the bike vehicle. That is really important.
I mean, where he was standing when he threw the rock.
Absolutely. There was no evidence. He could have been standing. He was over 6 foot tall. The entire height of the fence is about a little over 6 foot. He could have easily just been perching it there and dropping and timing. Obviously, he's doing this for an hour. He's getting good at it. And
was there any question with the proximate cause issue? Was there any evidence when the police, did you mention when the police were contacted about?
Well, the police were contacted at 11:12 and 11:15. At 11:50, after the cubic vehicle was hit, a police car happened to by, and he noticed a fight. The gentleman, the priest, who had apparently become bored with that and started a fight with another individual who was walking in the area. And apparently, the Newburgh Heights Police, somehow, that police officer didn't know about the previous call regarding that bridge, and there's no evidence that they were there to apprehend a rock thrower. He just happened by and saw that this fight was going on. It's really interesting to note that Mr. Kleitner testified that he really thought that something had fallen off the bridge. That's how close he was to the bridge when he got hit. Mr. Forsberg testified that he captured steeper the construction zone on a 55-1 taper, which means that as this vehicle approached the bridge, it was essentially in the same position it would have been under normal conditions. Plaintiff's own expert testified that under normal conditions, the fence was fine. It's ridiculous to assume that a few inches difference makes that fence suddenly inadequate. It's ridiculous to assume that even 3 or 4 foot of a shift makes that fence inadequate. There's just no evidence in the record to support that. We believe that the evidence in the record clearly shows that ODOT did not owe a duty to Mr. Spiker to prevent the criminal act of Mr. Jackson. We believe that in the Samani case, this court once again stood by its decision in the Federal Steel and Wire case. And in that case, this court found that there is generally no duty to control or to protect from criminal acts. There were no special circumstances in this case that would require ODOT to do so. Mr. Kleitner testified at the trial of this matter and said that he pursued his case against ODOT because he did not want his children to wake up every morning in fear that there are people in the world who go out intentionally trying to harm others. Well, the reality is that's the kind of world we live in, and that is exactly what Ronald Jackson did on that particular day. It is clear Ronald Jackson himself said he knew what he was doing. He was intoxicated, but he knew what he was doing. Although we can sympathize with Spiker's family, we can't allow our sympathy to create bad law. There is simply nothing in Ohio law that would provide for liability in this case. Spiker's family, we are victims of crime, and the legislature has provided compensation for victims of crime. But it is not the ODOT, the Ohio Department of Transportation, that is responsible to prevent criminal acts by third parties in the state of Ohio. We would ask the court to recognize that, in fact, the sole proximate cause of this tragic incident was the criminal act of Ronald Jackson by affirming the lower court's well-reasoned decision.
Thank you, Ms. Hobecker. Mr. Cretuccio, you say 3 minutes of your time.
2 minutes.
Thank you.
The defense engineer expert, Mr. Krueger, admitted that the level of safety was reduced when the lane of travel was shifted to the berm without overhead protection. That statement is in supplement page 29, Collins Brief. In addition, there's a question about foreseeability. The Federal Steel versus Ruin case talks about incidents which are under the control of the defendant, even though they're conducted by third parties. In this case, ODOT knew by virtue of 2 murders in Akron, and then the subsequent death of Deborah Kleitner, and then finally in the Samani case, within a period of a few years, statewide we've had 4 murders. All because of objects thrown from the bridge. An important fact that I believe Bill mentioned is this particular piece that went through this missile weighed 14 pounds, and part of it struck the windshield. One of the engineers testified that part of it may have broken off and landed in the street. This is not a simple little object that a child tosses off like a baseball. This was a huge chunk of broken curbing left laying on the street at the bridge that ODOT knew about. Bailiff Persani, the construction engineer, admitted they gave the city consent to do this and coordinated with the owner. They had knowledge. And independent of policy 1005, which ODOT admits it knew of, we've got correspondence in which Mr. Leek, one of the experts that testified with ODOT, admitted he got a copy of that what he didn't think was necessary because there was a bridge.
What is your response?
I mean, there was a fence, I'm sorry.
What is your response to the state's statement about the facts that the car only really had to move over a very, sounded like less than an inch from the...
14-pound tuck of concrete could not be easily locked over a 6-foot fence. I think it's technical, I think it's petty, and it's just contrary to all the evidence.
Well, could it be...
If you drop a straight plumb off, sure, there's probably not much room. But this thing was lifted over the unfenced area. And the police report describes in detail where it was launched from. I lost my plate, but it's marked in the supplement exactly the unfenced area that gave the suspect the opportunity to reach the burn.
It was more than a suspect. He was charged, tried, and convicted of the murder.
Right. Well, he was a suspect at the time the inspection was started. Finally, let me analogize something about what's reasonable, what damage, particularly in the foreseeability of this event. Professor Thomas Lambert said that it's better to build a fence at the top of a cliff rather than place an ambulance at the bottom of a cliff. A simple effort on the part of ODOT could have prevented this death. If the Columbus Zoo were to put a three-sided fence around the cage with tigers and lions, and one of those animals escaped and killed somebody, would their argument be the same as ODOT? This was adequate for the circumstances. It's incomplete.
Thank you, Mr. Kutusha. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.